We are bringing together imperfect people in pursuit of a whole life. Welcome to the Pathfinder Church Message Podcast. This week, Pastor Dion shares his message from Stronger Than Oak, I'm in Charge.
History may prove me wrong, but I believe that the elections that we just came through in the last week, I believe that they are the most overhyped elections of my lifetime. And by that, I don't mean to say that presidential elections in the United States are ever inconsequential. Of course they're consequential. They matter so much. And yet, the talk over the course of the election cycle has been that they matter way more than they actually do. And each side promising that if the other side gets elected, it's going to be apocalyptic and it's going to be, you know, dangerous for all of us. And I just don't believe that's true. I think politicians have learned what social media algorithms have learned, that if you can make people feel outraged or afraid, you'll get them to respond. And that's what we see happening in politics. I just don't think they're as consequential as everyone has made them out to be. Now, of course, I may be wrong. Time, and only time, will tell. But at the end of the day, who cares what I think about this stuff, right? What does that matter? I want to give you something actually more solid. I've been meditating on this verse for the last weeks. This is Paul in Romans chapter 13. He says, "Let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." Read that again. "For there is no authority." There is no authority. There is no authority except that which God has established. And then he repeats himself another way, and he says, "The authorities that exist," in case you're missing it, "all the authorities that exist have been established by God." That's a very strong statement, a very impactful promise that Paul makes here, that all authorities have been established by God. There is no authority except that which God has established. And maybe you find some comfort in that, or maybe you find that statement confusing. Like, okay, if that's true, then what kind of sense of humor does God have? Or what is God doing? What is he thinking? Here's what's really interesting about these words that Paul wrote. As Paul wrote these words, he wrote them to the church at Rome. That's why it's called Romans. And you know this, that Rome was the capital of the Roman Empire. So the city of Rome, the capital of the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire wasn't a very, like, Christian-friendly place. It was a brutal regime, lots of godlessness in the Roman Empire, and Paul writes these words about the emperor sitting on the throne in ruling over the Roman Empire. We're having some mic issues today. We'll see what we can do about that. In particular, the emperor that he's writing about is a guy by the name of Nero. Here was a bust of Nero. Someone made an image of Nero. I mean, that guy looks like a deviant if you've ever seen one, doesn't he? I don't know, but Nero was a deviant. This was not a good, wholesome guy. He, in the annals of history, they remember him to be a really, really bad guy. What's most interesting about Nero, who was the emperor sitting on the throne in Rome at the time that Paul wrote the letter to the Romans, Romans 13, saying, "There is no authority except that which God has established," talking about even Nero. What's interesting is that a few years later, Nero would be the emperor who oversaw Paul's execution for his faith. Nero put to death not only Paul, but multitudes of other Christians for the simple fact that they believed in Jesus. Which makes me wonder if Paul could go back and do some editing to these words in Romans 13, right? Because when he wrote these things, Nero hadn't put him to death yet, obviously. It makes me wonder, would Paul change his mind? Did history prove Paul wrong? Did Paul underestimate Nero's depravity? Or for us, maybe just backing away from Paul and Nero for a second, maybe you're looking at these words and you're wondering, yeah, but do these words apply when we're in a democracy where people vote and people choose their own leaders? Does that still apply? Does it apply if there's foreign interference in an election, if the election's stolen, if people who aren't allowed to vote vote? Do these words still apply? And Paul is unequivocal about this. Paul says, and I don't think he would change his mind because he's writing under the influence of the Holy Spirit. I don't think he would change his mind. Paul says, there is no authority except that which that has been established by God. Now, if this is still troublesome for you, I don't blame you, but let me share with you the other part of all of this. Although this is true, what we don't know is why God establishes authority. We don't know for what reason God might establish any leader over the people. Our assumption is that if God establishes a leader, it must be that the leader is close to his heart, that the leader's faithful, and so God puts a faithful leader in place so that that leader can prosper the people and bless them and bring peace and safety, and especially bring peace and safety to Christians. And that's true a large part of the time, but not always. See, what we see throughout the Bible and throughout history is that sometimes God establishes leadership. God puts a leader in place whose job is to make life a living hell for the faithful. Right? Nero. Nero did all kinds of awful things against Christians. And we may wonder, why would God do something like that? Why would God establish authority who's not there to bless and bring peace and prosperity, and especially to lift up the faithful and support the faithful in their cause? Why would God establish a leader who worked against faithfulness? And what we see is there are a few reasons. Sometimes it's because the faithful need to be refined. And there is no tool that refines our character like the tool of suffering. Paul talks about that in another place. Or it could be that there are things in us that need to be purged. There are stubborn sins inside of us, in our hearts and our minds and our land, that need to be purged out of the hearts of the people. That's what we see God doing in the Old Testament through the exile that happens with ancient Israel. Ultimately, I think, why does God allow leaders to be established who might work against the faithful? Ultimately, there is no better witness in all of the world than how the faithful suffer when they suffer unjustly. Right? Nero's doing all this awful stuff, puts Paul to death, puts other Christians to death, and you would think that that put a damper on the Christian movement, but it didn't. It had the opposite effect, because people saw the way that Christians died with integrity, with faith, with deep belief, even as they were facing death, and people said, there must be something here. We see this today in China, where the Christian church is being oppressed, if not outright persecuted. And we see that the underground church in China, it is booming. And meanwhile, you look over here where we have the free practice of religion, and you know the state of faith in our country, which makes me wonder, it just makes me wonder, maybe someday God will establish leadership. I don't know when, I don't know how, maybe. But establish leadership, and he establishes that leadership to actively persecute the church, so that we might be refined in our character, so that we might be purged of some of our lukewarmness or some of the stubborn sins that we just can't seem to let go of, so that we might be a witness to a world that doesn't believe, and we might show them that there's something powerful and real about having faith in Jesus. Who's ready? Me neither. I don't want that. I don't want that. But this is what Paul's saying. Paul's saying there is no authority except that which God has established. So we can look at authority and we can say, hey, God had a hand in that. But what we don't get to know until we look back in the rearview mirror of history, we don't get to know for what purpose, for what reason. We just know that God is always doing something ultimately for our good. And so today we're looking at this deeper promise of Jesus that all of what I just talked about is built on. This promise from Jesus that simply says, I am in charge. I'm the boss, Jesus says. And for some of us, we see this and we feel an instant wave of comfort. We're like, oh, that's so good to remember. Yeah, Jesus is in charge. And some of us, we look at this and we go, I'm not sure about that. Because if you look around at the world, sometimes it looks like the animals are running the zoo, doesn't it? Or the parents have left the room and it's now level 5 Lord of the Flies up in here. Like, what is going on? It's natural for us to look at what's happening in the world and to really wonder, is Jesus actually in charge? Is he paying attention? Now, as someone who has been a boss of people for some time, Here's what I know. And if you've ever led anyone, you know this to be true too. Whether you've led a group project at school or a project at work, if you lead people professionally, if you are a parent, if you are a parent of children, you know this to be true, that when you are the boss, when you are in charge, when you are the leader, people can't help but armchair quarterback you. Right? You get armchair quarterbacked all the time when you're the boss, don't you? Like people sitting in the comfort of the cheap seats, like going, judging all of your decisions, telling you how you should have done it differently. It happens all the time. When you're the boss, people will doubt your decision-making. They'll doubt your intelligence. They'll doubt your experience. They will doubt your integrity. They'll doubt your goodwill. When you are the boss, when you're in charge, even though everyone will say, yeah, we know you can't make everybody happy. We know. We'll say that. You can't make everybody happy. Just ride with the microphone. We're not sure what's going on. It's a new microphone, and so it's being a little pesky. When you're the boss, you can't even get the microphone to work for you, right? When you're the boss, even though you can, everyone knows, like, you can't make everyone happy, people will still be furious with you when they're the ones you didn't make happy. When you're the boss, it's really hard to explain yourself to people because sometimes people are so preoccupied with their own narrative of truth and what's going on that they don't listen, or they just can't understand because they've never been in your shoes. When you're the boss, sometimes it doesn't even make sense to try to explain yourself just because it wouldn't be appropriate, or you know people can't understand. When you're the boss, you get armchair quarterbacked all the time. That's the universal experience of being in charge. Even if you're Jesus. And we know it because we do it in our hearts. But today I want to show you an example of this, where Jesus, the world's best boss, where his leaders, the people he leads rather, armchair quarterback him. This is from Mark chapter 4. That day when evening came, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go to the other side." And they're kind of in this region surrounded by the Sea of Galilee. And rather than walking around from one side to the other or taking an Uber or something, in those days, you get in the boat, especially when your disciples are mostly fishermen. You just get in the boat, you sail to the other side. And so that's what they do. They leave the crowd on one side and they get in a boat and they come along with Jesus just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats there with him sailing across the sea. At that time, a furious squall came up and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Now, Jesus was in the stern. He's in the back of the boat, sleeping on a cushion. And the disciples, and remember, I just told you this, the disciples, many of them are fishermen. They grew up in this area. They grew up on the water. So this is not an overreaction. This must be a really, really bad storm because the disciples in a panic wake him up and they say to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" See, they're armchair quarterbacking him, right? Not only questioning his judgment, not questioning just his integrity, but questioning his very heart for them. They don't understand what's going on. They don't know why he's sleeping. And where do they go? They go immediately to this conclusion: "You must not love us. You must not care about us. You must not be a very good leader." What an insulting question. And I know for me, again, as a leader, I don't expect that I'm a perfect leader, but when people question my heart for them, that stings. And yet, if you're the disciples, can you blame them for drawing that conclusion? I mean, it's a horrible storm, obviously, and Jesus is sleeping through it. Like, what are you doing, Jesus? What are you trying to prove here? Do you really not care? Why aren't you doing something about this if you have the power to do something? See, this is an age-old conundrum that people have wrestled with. There's another guy who lived 300 years actually before Jesus, Epicurus. And he had this whole, you know, wrestling match with, if evil exists in the world, then how can you say that there is a God? Or if there is a God, how can that God be both powerful and good if evil exists? And so you can't see all this flow chart, but I just like found it online, and it's interesting. People today still holding on to this line of thinking. Evil exists, okay? Storms come and they swamp your boat. Things happen in life that are bad. Evil exists. If that's true, then you ask yourself the question, can God prevent evil? If you say yes, well, does God know about all the evil? If you say yes, does God want to prevent evil? If you say yes, then why is there evil? Right, and then to test us or Satan, does God not powerful over Satan? If God's knowing, why does he all knowing? Why does he need to test us? Or can God prevent evil? No. Well, clearly God's not all powerful. Does God know about the evil? Well, no, then God's not all knowing. Does God want to prevent all the evil? Then no, God's not good. God's not loving, right? Like you can go through this whole thing and whether you've seen this chart or not, I know this mirrors your internal dialogue sometimes. When stuff in life is confusing or you're going through a time that's really, really difficult, we try to grapple with all these things. There's a God, he's good, he's loving, he's all-knowing. Like, then why isn't he doing something different? And you can hear this from the disciples in the boat. They're grappling. This is early on in Jesus' ministry, and they're grappling with who this guy might be, and he could be the Son of God, which means he should be powerful and good, and yet the storm is coming, and they're about to drown, and he's sleeping. And you can just see them going through the list, being like, what is going on here? And although that's a painful interrogation and kind of a belligerent question for Jesus, look at Jesus' response to them. So he got up. I don't know about you, but when people wake me up from a nap, I'm not quite so with it or happy. But he got up, he rebuked the wind and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down and it was completely calm. It's amazing, isn't it? When you think about that miracle, you can go back there for a quick second. When you think about this miracle, still to this day, with all of our technology, we have not figured out how to make the winds die down. We have not figured out how to stop the waves. The best we've done here in middle America is we build levees, right? Which maybe arguably make flooding worse in other places. We can't stop the hurricanes from coming. The best we can do is build stronger houses and get people out of there and have quicker relief efforts. We have still not figured out how to do this, and yet Jesus with these words exhibits mastery over the wind and the waves. And then the reaction of the disciples. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" And they were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves, they obey him." So the disciples are left in this place of just terror, like, whoa, this guy is truly powerful. We have never seen anything like this. And yet what I want to focus on for the rest of our time today is I want to focus not on the miracle. I want to focus on this question from Jesus. Do you still have no faith? Now, on the surface, this may seem like an insensitive question, like kind of needling at these guys. I mean, they had a reason to be afraid, right? The storm was bad. Jesus is sleeping. I'd be afraid. So would you. So this question, do you still have no faith? Maybe we hear Jesus just kind of needling them. Or I'll tell you what, a lot of people hear this question and they draw the conclusion that what Jesus is saying is that if you just have enough faith, that the storms in life won't come. Or if you just have enough faith, you'll be victorious over all of the storms. There will never be a storm that swamps your boat. There'll never be a storm that takes you out. That you can be victorious over everything in life with just enough faith. And that's not what Jesus is saying. More simply, here's what I understand Jesus to be saying when he asks this question, do you still have no faith? Here's what I hear him saying. He's saying, do you still not trust me? Hear the word from Jesus today. In the moments of fear and chaos when we're not sure what's going on, his word to us is, hey, do you trust me? Do you trust me? Do you trust that I'm both powerful and all-knowing and good? Even when you can't understand what's going on, even when life is chaos, do you trust me? I realize this message has been pretty heady up to this point. Let me try to bring it down to a heart level for a minute. only a few months after I moved here to St. Louis, which was like 16 years ago, I received just horrible news about a pastor that I used to work with in Minnesota. This pastor, he's a little bit older than me. His family was a little bit older than mine. And yet, like my family, he had, I think his microphone's cutting out, but like my family, he had two girls and a boy. And both of, or all three of his kids were very artistic, very musical, and they were older than my kids. And so I kind of looked at them like, oh, this feels like our family in just a few years, and just really admired them. And a few months after I moved here to St. Louis, I got word that his oldest daughter, Mackenzie, right around the time of her high school graduation, died in a just dumb, pointless car accident. One of her friends was driving, everyone's sober, middle of the afternoon, ran a red light, got T-boned, three kids in the car. Mackenzie's the only one who died. The other two were okay. And I grieved that loss like it was one of my own children. I took it so hard, and I couldn't fully understand why. It was tragic, yeah, but I couldn't fully understand why, because in this line of business, you see lots of tragedy. I couldn't understand why it affected me so deeply. We weren't particularly close with this family. I had only worked with him for less than a year. It had been a while since we had actually seen any of them. They moved to Texas. Like, it was this whole thing. And what I came to realize is that I wasn't just grieving the loss of Mackenzie and the loss for this family. What I was grieving was a version of my faith that said, hey, Dion, if you're just faithful, if you trust me, if you follow me, if you serve me, if you give me your life, if you give me your career, if you serve me faithfully and you try to point your family towards me, then a little bit of bad stuff will happen in your life, but you will never have to experience the greatest heartbreaks in life. See, I realized that that's what I thought faith meant. I had bought into this message that if I just had enough faith and enough obedience, that I would be spared the worst things in life. And then here I'm watching a faithful man of God with a faithful family going through something that for me was absolutely unthinkable. And so I came to realize I wasn't just grieving the loss of Mackenzie. I was grieving the loss of my faith, a version of faith that needed to die. And that day, what I began to hear Jesus say to me, and he's been saying it to me over the last 16 years, is, Dion, does your faith in me depend on things working out how you think they should? Does your faith in me depend on everything working out in the way that you have planned and hope and dream? Dion, will you trust me even when life breaks your heart? And guess what? It has. Life has broken my heart many times over. And yet, I do. I somehow trust him. If that's hard for you to agree with or get there, I think here's part of the mechanism. Pastor Doug Moss shared this with me this week as he was preparing for one of his action teams that he leads, that to get to trust, especially when we're talking about leadership, trust requires two components. It requires empathy from the person and also authority. Person's gotta be in charge and they have to be empathetic, and then you can get to trust. So we all know this to be true, that if someone has authority, but they have no empathy, if they don't understand what we're going through, they don't get us, or they don't have compassion for us, but they've got power, that's scary, right? Someone with power or authority who doesn't care about us or doesn't understand us, that's scary. That's the stuff of tyrants. That's scary. That's dangerous. We would never trust that kind of leadership. But on the flip side, empathy, even as great as empathy is, it's not enough. I mean, this is the customer service representative who is so empathetic with your problem and they're so sorry for all of your trouble and they feel so bad for you and they're saying all the right things, but they don't have the power to actually get your refund or to send you a replacement item, right? All the empathy in the world without the authority to do something about it, it's not helpful. And that's when you've got to be a Karen And you got to say, you know the word, you got to say, can I speak to your manager? And it's not a bad thing, because if the person only has empathy, but they don't have power to solve your problem, like, what good are they? Thank you for the empathy, but I need someone with authority. It is only when you've got these two things together, someone who understands and cares and sees you and values your suffering or struggle, and someone who has the power to do something about it, those are the places where, and only the places, and only the kinds of people where we can actually bring our hearts and our minds to trust. And so today I want you to know that Jesus is worthy of your trust. Because we've seen it today that he not only has authority over everything in your life, he has authority over the elements of nature. He speaks a word and the wind and the waves obey him. With a word, kingdoms rise. With a word, kingdoms fall. He is one of ultimate authority. But guess what? He's not some authority figure, some C-suite executive in his corner office, hiding behind a legion of junior executives. He's not some president hiding behind a wall of secret service, walled off from the people that he serves. Jesus is the kind of authority, kind of like this show, if you've ever seen it. Anyone ever seen Undercover Boss? I've only seen a few episodes. I was shocked to know there are at least 10 seasons. But the premise is simple. A leader of a company comes down in disguise and functions as one of the workers within the organization so that she or he can see what it's really like to live day-to-day life in the company that she or he leads. See, this is what Jesus has done for us. Yeah, he can demonstrate his power over the wind and the waves, but notice that just leaves the disciples terrified. This guy's got power, but we don't yet know what his heart is for us. And Jesus, that's what his whole purpose on earth was to show, not just that he has power, but he came down to live and work amongst us to show us that he gets what we're going through. He understands the labor of living life in this world. He understands the trials and the grind and the suffering and the sickness and the heartbreak that comes when tragedy comes, or when people betray you, or where you're abandoned, or whenever you're alone. He understands broken government. He understands the feeling of hopelessness. He gets it all. And because he has all power and authority to remedy all of our problems, and he's demonstrated to us that he even understands what it's like to be staring down the barrel of death, your own mortality. He's gone through that all. He gets every part of our existence. The invitation is to trust him. Do you still have no faith? Jesus is saying, can you just trust that I'm powerful and I'm good? I get you, and I'm here because I love you. Can you trust him in moments when it seems like everything's going in the wrong direction? Can you trust his love for you? Can you trust him? His power and authority that he can speak a word over wind and waves and they must obey, and so he can speak a word over anything else in your life, in this world that he wants to change, and it will obey. Can you trust that? Can you trust that along the way you'll be refined, that things will be purged through the hardships of life, that he's doing something through all of those things? Do you trust that through the example of how you patiently suffer in faith, do you trust that other people are watching and they'll come to know the love of Jesus in their life too? Can you trust him? Let me wrap up with this. One of the things that I'm working on, and y'all can come grab the TV and everything. One of the things that I'm working on is to not do to Jesus the very thing that I can't stand people doing to me as a leader. I'm really trying not to armchair quarterback him. And at the end of the day, I think I know what it is to be in charge or to lead people, and so I put my opinions on Jesus, but here's the truth. I have no idea what it must be like to rule over an entire universe, to ensure that the planets stay in their place and the asteroids go around in the right orbit, right? Like, I have no idea. Even to bring it down, I have no idea what it must be like to direct the destinies of 8 billion people on this planet. sinful, stubborn people like you and me, people who are making a mess of things in our life, people who make mistakes along the way. I have no idea what it must be like to allow those people to live and move, but to direct the destinies of 8 billion people on this planet to something that is good for them and good ultimately, not just for them, but for the whole, and not just for the whole now, but for the whole into the future. I have no idea what that must be like. I just know that I wouldn't be good at that job. I don't want that job. I could not do that job. To direct all of this and somehow make it work out for our good. And so I'm trying to stop armchair quarterbacking him. Instead, when I'm confused, when I don't understand what's going on, I'm calling my heart to trust, and I'm calling your hearts to trust as well. Can you trust him? Can you trust him that he's in charge, even when it doesn't look like it? Can you trust that he is in charge, even when life feels really, really bad and scary? Can you trust that he's in charge even when life has broken your heart? Can you trust that he's in charge working out everything, all the chaos even, for your good? Earlier we sang a song and had some powerful words. I wanna go back to those words, and I wanna use these words as a way to speak over our own hearts and our own minds, calling our hearts and our minds to trust, even when we don't understand. And so I invite you to just say these words with me and speak these words over your heart and mind. We're gonna say these a few times. Say this with me. You make all things work together for my future and for my good. You make all things work together for your glory and for your name. Say that again. You make all things work together for my future and for my good. You make all things work together for your glory and for your name.
Make all things.
Sing these words.
Work together.
Just speak them out, just over your heart again and again.
And for my good, you make all things work together for your glory and for your name.
Sing it again.
You make all things work together for my future and for my good. You make all things work together for your glory and for your name.
Come on, one more time. Keep speaking it over your own heart.
All things work together for my future.
Call your heart to trust.
And for my good, you make all things work together for your glory and for your name.
Can you believe that he's trustworthy and good, working all things together? I hope you can, because there's no other way to peace in life, there's no other way to formation in life than to yield, to trust his leadership. Even when you don't understand it, he's proven himself to be faithful. Amen. I invite you to rise now as we pray together the prayer that Jesus has taught us, reminding us again that there is one authority. There's one authority, and it is a loving parental authority that is over all of us. Let's appeal to him now. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Pathfinder Church Message Podcast. If you'd like to hear more messages like this, hit the subscribe button. You can also find more resources at our website, pathfinderstl.org.